Okay, are we ready to come back? I think I hear a yes from the audience. We don't want to miss a moment. So while you're coming back, I would like to thank the Pink Group for providing our refreshments today. And I would also, in particular, like to thank Mary Humphreys for providing us with the electric tea kettle. So, we are very grateful. Judith has asked me to point out that this concert with Emmett Cahill, in case you don't know who he is, he's with Celtic Thunder, which you may have seen on PBS. So that's what the concert in December is all about. And so I think that's all my midterm announcements, and so with no further ado, here's Jim again.
All right, well, this is your chance to respond to what Judith has written in her book. So I promise you we'll have some time for questions, but I'd like to get us into the practice, and it's this. In light of this part of the book, where do you sense God inviting you to participate in your own conversion in life? In other words, is it about not only recognizing but practicing being a blessing to others in specific ways? Is it about stepping more deeply into the contemplative life with a particular practice? Or is it about recognizing that God's calling you to be a wisdom figure and what that means for you at this stage in your life? Okay? So again, the question would be, where do you sense God inviting you to participate more fully in the deeper conversion of your own life? Okay, in the context of your life. Where is God inviting you to do that? So I'm going to ask you to speak from the heart, to listen from the heart, to be spontaneous, and then finally to get to the point. Okay? So the way I'd like to invite you to do this is, again, pair up with someone. Let that other person go first. Don't interrupt them. Listen to them through. And when they finish, then you take the time. In fact, I'll call time halfway through if you haven't gotten to the point. Okay? So is that clear? All right. So find somebody to share with one-on-one. It's good. I saw you. Okay, thank you for sharing. So I'd like to take this time just to thank you for being here. It is people like you who continue to encourage me just by your presence and your regular gathering. So please take heart to know that that's one of the great gifts for us as human beings, that even you may feel like, well, how come there aren't more thousands of people here like you and with the same hunger? But just being here, it's kind of like having a vacation home. You know it's there and you can go to. So even if you can't make a particular morning, just to know there's a group of people who hold you in prayer and good thoughts and support and encourage you, that you are sons and daughters of encouragement, blessing each other. So thank you for your presence in my life, and I'm privileged to be here. So this is a time for... So thank you. Thank you. This is a time for your questions. Now, in fairness, I'd be happy to address questions not just from the chapters I was assigned to, but from the rest of the book in terms of, like, say, Benedictine spirituality or the way Judith unpacked it. So if you have any questions, please come forward to the microphone. Or not. Yes.
I have known you for probably 25 years at least from San Roque when we had small groups and used to come. And I'm just so amazed at, it just sounds so foolish to say, how you have grown. But how you have just become more of who you are. And I'm not going to go on except to hope that maybe there's a little bit that's happening to me too, or that did in those 25 years. But I want to thank you for being in like the vacation home in my life. But he's been a wonderful, wonderful mentor for us and beautiful person who's always opened up for us the beautiful vistas that God has for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. I think that's the nicest compliment I ever received. Thank you. Well, you know, I'll tell you a little secret. When I was ordained a priest, I thought God was calling me to be a priest so I could, quote, save people. It took me a while to learn that it was the other way around. God asked me to be a priest so you could save me. So once I realized that, then I realized I had to be faithful to do the work that I'm inviting you to do. And that's how it happened, is that I felt to be a person of integrity, I had to keep going deeper and deeper and deeper on so many levels, life experience, education, relationships, and all that. So thank you, Kathy.
As you were talking, you know, about what's meaningful and what you could be doing and all this, and of course I think most of us think, well, how can we help more people? You know, that's how I am. I'm always reaching out and helping or doing. And the last thing you were just talking about, even what you were saying now, is conversion of self. And that hit me so hard, that word, the conversion of self. And I was telling Gloria, I just got chills and chills and chills. And I think that's something we don't usually think about. We think about, okay, how can we help others? Just like you thought in the early part of your priesthood. So I think it's something really, well, it is something I'm going to contemplate and see how I can and what to do with all that you said, you know, about not just reading, but also the meditating and going within. And I keep getting ahead about reading the Bible. And I was talking to Gloria about reading some of the New Testament chapters leading up to Christmas. So I think that's going to be part of it also.
Excellent idea. Thank you. Let me give you an example of how that might unpack for all of us. Obviously, I'm a part of the baby boomer generation. And because of the position I am in the Archdiocese, I had to do some research on generation. I don't know if you know this, but it's XYZ. And the brand new one, from birth until the age of 7, is now being called Alpha. Because we've gone all the way to Z, now it's Alpha. So, and as you probably know about generational studies, is that every generation reacts to what went on before. Okay? So my nephews are in the generation, some of them are tweeners, but millennial and Generation Z. And so to me right now, this is how God's appearing to me, because I'm thinking, well, listen, you should call me, but that's not the way it operates. So I've learned from my siblings, no, Jim, if you want to communicate with your nieces and nephews, try texting. Well, I have one of my nephews, my namesake, I tried texting, calling in a cell, no answer. So when I saw him in person, he lives in another state, I said, so James, how do I communicate with you? And I told him what I'd done, and he goes, he smiled and says, in person. I said, it's easy for you to say, but you live in Texas. He just went like this. So in other words, we meet people where we're at. So I'm slowly learning a whole different area, because I don't have children or grandchildren. I have nieces and nephews, and grandnieces and nephews now too. I'm learning from them a different way of being present. And it's a challenge to all of us, let's face it. Because their way of being present is very different than ours. Do you know that millennials complain about 30% of them are very lonely? And most of them cannot name a close friend. So that speaks of what we can offer. Rather than lecturing them and say, well, if you get off your phone or get off your iPad. No. That when you're in their presence, look them in the eye. Listen carefully. Ask open-ended questions. Think of dealing with teenagers, okay? You'll get it. But to listen deeply they'll begin to understand what it means to be in intimacy. I know this sounds strange and very pedantic, but we actually had, with the seminarians, who most of them were millennials when I was there, we actually had to have a class on loneliness and intimacy. We brought in a social worker who's excellent, and he talked about these are the levels of intimacy. Here's how you become a friend. And I gave one conference on this, and it was the first time a seminarian came up to me and said, Father, that was the best talk you ever gave. I'm thinking, no, it wasn't. It's the best talk you heard. And it was all about loneliness. So even though they won't talk about it, it's there. But if we listen, you'll get a feel for, oh my gosh, it is a different generation. You know, because we were much more gregarious and joining volunteer groups and all that. They don't do that. They don't do that. So it's not about waiting for them to come to you or living up to your ideals. It's finding out what's there. So in terms of this topic, this is a very positive thing. They love meditation. They absolutely love, they're Catholics, they love Eucharistic adoration. Because you see, it's about them individually. They can do it on their own time. So they can teach us some things too. I met a graduate. We were having a great intellectual conversation, a graduate from Berkeley. And he was asking for resources. And he said, what do you read? Where do you get all this information? I was telling him. And he says, now, what books are you reading? And he chuckled and he goes, True Confession? I said, yeah, what? He goes, I don't read books. I said, what? You don't read books? And you graduated from university like Berkeley? And he said, yeah. I said, well, where do you get your stuff? He goes, online. He doesn't own any books. So all these differences, either we can choose to have an open heart, an open way of relating to other generations, listening and learning. And plus, as you probably already learned this, is that they poke holes in some of the things we hold as being valuable. And rather than defending, just listen, the contemplative stance, well, that's interesting. That's a different way of doing that. And then join with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I appreciated about the talk this morning is that it wasn't so framed in the language of Christianity. So to me, it's as we talk with other people, and it's so important to kind of open up our language so that we can connect with people and they aren't excluded by our language. And you did such a beautiful job with that this morning. So thank you.
Thank you. I learned from a story. And it was a story about a Jesuit who was 80 years of age. And he was rather stunned when one of his nieces told him that she no longer goes to church. And it was a very Catholic family. And he said, why? And she said, there's no place for me. What do you mean there's no place for you? And he started giving everything. And she said, Uncle, we'll call him Joe. Uncle Joe, you recite the creed and put the feminine pronoun to the mass and see how you feel. And he was stunned. And then she gave him several examples. He said just that testimony by his niece, from then on he started using language that was more welcoming and open, and did his best, even in relationship to God. This is a man who had been a priest for decades, all because of his niece. She didn't come back to the church, but at least he came back to a larger way of being present to the human community. So thank you. I can't believe there are any more questions, comments. Okay.
This is not a question. It's a continuation of the comments that have been made before. This way? Oh, okay. This is not a question. It's a continuation of what has come before. And I've been at Word and Life mostly on rather than off for about, did we decide 25 years? Whoever I was talking with, where are you? About 25 years. And like them, I've really enjoyed every time we've been here. And one of the reasons is because I'm not a Christian. And I'm not anything, really. But I am a spiritual seeking person. And you have always made me feel welcome, and as most of you have. And the closest I was to a religion as an adult was Buddhist meditation. And the way you spoke today, it just was everything. There was no particular religion, way of speaking, anything. And continue, please. Continue on with your work. You're just doing a wonderful job.
Well, I'd like to pull out a piece of what you said. Many people in our generation especially are afraid of letting go of the known. And one of the things letting go of the known is the language we grew up with. But we live in a time, and I believe this is a time of necessary destruction. Richard Rohr would call it disorder. There's different authors who use different language. But it's a necessary time to say that we have come from a time where the language was used to separate, to divide, and to hold down human beings. And so if you look at the many different fields of human studies, on different levels and layers, we are being surrounded in our various churches and religions by trying to hold on to say, yes, but we're doing this in the name of God. Well, Jesus, if you remember, in the way he modeled it, he reacted against that type of language. And he did what you were talking about, what has helped you feel welcome. And so generation, millennials, by the way, prefer generation Y. But generation Y and Z are calling us back to that, you just said, Tony. The idea, and it feels to us like the world is falling apart. It's falling apart in preparation for it to come together in a new way, according to historians. And to trust that God is in the midst of it. To recognize that this is how reality is going. Think of it as like a fire that's coming through so many of the things that have meant so much to us. But you know what happens after a fire. There's always reconstruction, renewal. And it's painful to go through it. It really is. You've given your life to certain ways of expressing yourself or your belief system. But to sit in the in-between, that's exactly what Good Friday is like. Think of this, just sitting with this death or this dying. And especially if you're going through that literally in your own life or with a loved one, it's painful. You want to say, isn't there anything good happening? Yes, that's why we go back to times of consolation. And so what words come up for you to describe your life experience, your belief system? A spirituality is nothing more than your value system. Some have a religious spirituality. Some it's a business spirituality or a sports. But it's how you live your life. It's your value system. And to recognize that as we relax the language or the unhealthy boundaries of saying who's in, who's out, now we're being challenged even to look at boundaries about gender. It's like, oh my gosh, what's next? But to sit with that and say, well, you know, something's going to come. And rather than fighting and arguing with your family members or friends who say, I'm this and not that, just again, practice a contemplative stance. Just observe, just listen, and say, wow, I've never thought of it that way. But this is why the human story is told in over 7 billion ways.
Thank you. So when you were asking us to try to think about what we feel our main calling is, I mean, in spite of the fact that I feel like I do help a lot of people at work and in my little circles of my family and friends, all I could think about is the climate crisis and how much it distresses me and how much I feel that I need to do even more. And I think I had a little moment of clarity that I feel like I really do need to do a lot more. And I appreciate that. And 'cause I don't think it's possible to exaggerate or to say that, you know, oh, that's not necessary to do, to get so worried or, you know. And along the lines of what you were just saying about a new opportunity, I think it does give us the opportunity to rework our whole social relationships to a much more community-oriented, cooperative way of living, sustainably. And so it is a great opportunity for us to all work together to really, you know, cherish our world and save it from the forces of evil. So, anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Anne. So we are to do few things, but do them well. There is such a temptation for us to get caught up in every little project that comes along. That can really destroy you. So what you just mentioned, Anne, is important. So you feel touched, called, drawn to climate change. Now just take that calling, that yearning, and ask God specifically how to do it. Your brother named John, who has begun to practice, it came from Sweden, and forgive me if I've got the name wrong, but it's a combination of when you go for a walk in the morning or a jog or even bike ride, carry a litter bag with you, just pick up litter as you go on. Isn't it called... I can't remember the word. But it actually is an accepted thing throughout many places in the world. It was started, if I remember correctly, in Sweden. And it's interesting, his wife is really upset about him doing that. I'm thinking, how in the world can he be upset with that? He takes their dog for a long walk, and he has this bright orange vest, and he goes along, and she's embarrassed because she said, "You look like a homeless man." And yet John is not one of these guys who toots his horn, but people have stopped and said, "Thank you for doing this." And he does it because it makes the whole neighborhood look better. So if graffiti upsets you, talk to your local supervisor or city council. Say, how can you do this so that you're not picked up for graffiti yourself? But to recognize, okay, this is your calling. And how do you do things like that? And obviously what you're alluding to, Anne, is very important. As you do something, a lot of people say, "That's great. Can I do it with you?" You see? So often we stop and we say, "Well, I'll do it when somebody else starts it." Well, maybe God's saying, "You're the one that's going to start it." And slowly, that's how movements start, is around one person. That's how religious orders started, by the way, around the spirituality of one person.
I think this works, right? Yeah. When you mentioned how young people love contemplation and they like being listened to, I was recently invited through Judy and Maureen to a place called the Way Collective. And it's a young PhD in divinity who became a pastor of a local church, but the church wanted to attract young people, and it couldn't. And then he suggested this, letting them talk and come up with what would be meaningful to them. And it was fascinating. They met in a brewery, and these kids came up with a whole new way of being spiritually based on the 5 C's. Contemplation, community, creativity, and I can't remember the other two. But after that, this church was so fascinated, and they said, well, they folded and they invited the young in, and it's all based and very much on Jesus' teachings, but less dogma, no dogma, no doctrine, and it feels very genuine, and they also wanted to do it around the meal, like Jesus did with the apostles. So they replace the pews with tables, and they have dinner once a week, and then the young reverend makes a very challenging presentation, and then 3 questions. How does this apply to you, to the sacred, and to the world? And then conversation on the table, and then it's open to the whole room. And it's fascinating. And these kids, I just love listening to them. I can't believe their depth. So I think there's hope. And it's this deconstruction, it's something Alice said a long time ago. How can we save the baby have throw the water away, but not the baby, you know. And this is what's happening. So anyway, I think there is hope.
Yes, it's a good sign. The millennial generation is very much concerned about the present. Generation Z is about the future. That's why a lot of Generation Zs, their main thing is what you just talked about, Anne, is about dealing with climate change. Millennials are very much into what you just described. So I definitely would agree. Here's a story from the San Fernando region. Local pastor there was tasked with being what they call the regional representative for vocations. And he started off doing what most priests do, and that is to tell the millennials what they needed to do. Well, nobody came to him. So he decided to try something else. And what he did was, he says, let's come together and let's just pray. And he decided to just lead them in a general prayer and then let them sit in Eucharistic adoration. And here's what happened. Almost right away, as you can imagine, these folks got on their cell phones and began texting each other throughout the week and saying, hey, there's a great experience of prayer on Wednesday night. Come and join us. He said one night he went over and there were over 300 young people just sitting there adoring the Lord in the Eucharist. They obviously were moved. Now, there were some shortcomings, which I won't go into, but he learned not to say a word about vocations. Because every time he brought it up, the numbers dropped dramatically. They basically were saying, listen, we don't want to talk about that. But here was God's great sense of humor. When he didn't talk about the vocations, one, two, three, four, eventually quite a few, would come and talk to him about a vocation. He said that's when he learned just to let them be together in prayer. And just what you said, discussions. Not only during that Wednesday night gathering, but also in regards to between them throughout the week. Eventually it led to an on-site parochial center where these young men and women, if they felt called to, could spend some time in prayer and reflection with the guidance of a woman religious and himself and a couple other priests to help them discern, is this really what God wants you to do? So you're right. It's a different skill set. So that's about all the time we have. Thank you very much. Many blessings to you.
And thank you so much. What a wonderful way for us to finish this fall session. We will be meeting again, I hope, in January. We haven't quite picked a book, though we've got some pretty good sense of what we might be doing. And I'm not sure whether we'll be starting yet on January 9th or January 16th, but I'm sure Judith will be sending out a message. So, and since I'm the name tag person, please remember to hand in your name tags. I'm not at the door to keep them, to warn you. Oh,
I just wanted to say thank you to Steering and all the volunteers and all the people that have brought everything and all of us that come together. I'm always sad on the last one, but I look forward to it when we're together again. But I'd like to give a round of applause to everybody who creates this special place for all of us.
Well, thank you. See you in January.